This episode of the Potato Field with Spudman is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They are dedicated to the continued development of new and improved post-harvest chemical applications through collaborative efforts with leading university researchers and private industry. Find out more at 1-4group.com. Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman. I'm managing editor Zeke Jennings of Spudman Magazine and the podcast host. Joining us today from Wisconsin is Bo Hartline from Alsem Farms. Bo, welcome to the show.
Hey, Zeke. Good to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. For those who aren't familiar with Alsem Farms, which you guys are a pretty big grower, but for those who aren't super familiar, could you share a little bit about the operation? You know, what you guys grow as far as the way, are you growing seed? Are you commercial? Are you processing? And just all that, you know, kind of overview stuff.
Yeah, so we're a grower and a packer in Wisconsin. Everything we grow is all fresh packed, pretty much. We're growing a lot of russet varieties, some A-size reds, and we do have some minis. We're growing about 2,800 acres. We're growing in kind of two different locations in Wisconsin. One of them's our South Farm, and that's in the Spring Green, Arena, River Valley area. And we're also growing up in Grand Marsh, area of Grand Marsh of Wisconsin. That's kind of on the south end of the Central Sands. So, yeah.
And I had a chance to visit, would have been not summer 2020, summer 19, because Larry Alsem was the president of NPC. So the summer meetings were right there in the Dells where you're pretty close to. And you guys have like a pretty large packing and shipping, not just potatoes, but a lot of, you source a lot of other produce.
Yes, sir. Yep. I get up there a few times a year, so I'm not too heavily involved in that, in the retail side of it. But they ship potatoes year round. And they also ship, quite a bit of retail fresh produce. So,
now, how long have you been with the company, and could you describe a little bit, firstly, what your title is and what all of your responsibilities kind of make up?
Yeah, so I'm the farm manager with Alsem Farms. I like to think of myself as kind of the guy that connects the dots. I feel like we have a pretty good team, and we have the right equipment. We just got to kind of match things up and make sure that things get where they need to go and the right time. And I feel like that's kind of the biggest thing I do here. I've been here since 2013, or originally started out as an intern. So I just kind of worked my way up a little bit and just blessed to work for a good company.
Yeah. And they're obviously a big fan of you. Larry Alsem nominated you for our Dream Team Awards this year, which you were selected to be on the team. So congrats on that. He was, he's obviously a big fan of yours and said you're really good at making technological decisions, making the right growing decision. So great job on all the work you're doing. What is your background exactly? Did you grow up on a farm, and how did you get into ag?
Yeah, so I grew up on it wasn't necessarily a hobby farm, but it was a smaller cow-calf beef farm in Oklahoma. To put it in perspective, we probably had one cornfield maybe in a 40 or 50 mile radius of where I grew up. So I didn't grow up with a lot of row crops or, that side of ag. It was mainly just cattle production.
And where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Oklahoma State. And it was there, that I originally started out in animal science, but then I kind of switched to kind of a more soils background. My degree was actually in agricultural leadership. But during the kind of the later coursework, I started taking some more classes in soils. And I just had one class that I took that the title, I think, was Soil and Nutrient Management. But the professor just really, really kind of inspired me. You know, he talked a lot about nitrogen use efficiency and how there's so much more to be gained of what we're putting on crops, and talked a lot about Norman Borlaug and kind of the green revolution that happened back in the 60s and 70s, and how the population was going to increase, you know, exponentially to what, 10 billion by 2050, they're talking. And, you know, he just kind of stressed the need that it was going to take people to kind of step up and kind of meet those needs and fill the gaps. And it just kind of really inspired me. So since that, I kind of looked to be more farm, you know, in the farming side of things versus the ranch, you know, side of things. So.
And the science aspect draw you in as well as learning how these different.
Yeah, very much. I was never good at science in school. I was also never good at math. It wasn't until I got into college that I kind of, you know, figured out that if I actually applied myself and studied that I could accomplish something. And I'm still not the best at it, but yeah, it's just, it's really interesting when you start looking at the interactions of fertilizer and soils, and, you know, even chemicals in soils. And there's a lot more to be gained there. But you know, if we look at what we have available and try to improve it, you know, I think certainly can.
And speaking of soil, you're the first guest that we've had on the podcast that's actually from Wisconsin, and you're in the central part of the state. Could you take us a little bit through what the growing season is like there? You know, when you plant, when you typically harvest, and what do you, you know, what kind of climate and season are you dealing with? And no year is typical, but every year is a little different. But, you know, going in, when do you typically plant? When do you typically harvest? What do you typically deal with?
Yeah, so typically, you know, I would say across Wisconsin, the majority of farms are planting sometime in the middle of April, toward the end of April. And most everybody looks to have harvest wrapped up by the middle, you know, the second week in October, say. You know, obviously there's some seed production in northern Wisconsin up in the Anago area. You know, that's quite a bit of a cooler climate than it is in Central Park. So they're probably not planting until sometime in, well into May, from my understanding. And I'm sure on the flip side, they've got to be done a lot earlier than what we typically are with harvest. So overall, I mean, it's, and again, I'm not for sure, you know, all the different classifications of climate, but, you know, there's, you know, we probably get, I think probably an average of 50 inches of rain a year. So it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty wet state compared to some of the Western states that grow potatoes. But it's also kind of a blessing too. You know, I'm not going to say we have an unlimited amount of water that we can apply on the fields, but, you know, the past 2 years in 2018, 2019, we sure had an unlimited amount of water with all the rains that we had.
Yeah. It's, I'm across Lake Michigan from you, as we speak here in Michigan. And, we probably deal with a lot of the same type of weather. Usually you get it a half a day or so before we do. Does it get typically pretty hot or pretty humid? You know, you get like late summer and when you start having to worry about blight and that kind of thing.
Yes, sir. Yep. It gets very humid. And you know, early blights always there throughout the year, kind of persisting. But yeah, once you get into mid July, it's kind of late blight season. So, that's kind of another challenge that we have. You know, it's always seems like we've got to be done by, you know, say the 10th of October, but we really can't start until the 10th of September with, you know, harvest, at least with storing potatoes, just because of the heat, you know. And there's some years that, you know, it's the third week in September, we've got to shut down because it just gets too hot. So that's kind of a challenge we can have some years.
Yeah, I like to joke that they should change the calendar to make summer July, August, and September, because September is always much warmer than June.
True, I agree.
And what do you like as far as the way of like rotational crops? What do you guys mix in your off years?
You know, the majority of what, you know, and again, we rent a lot of land and we rotate our land with other farmers. As a whole, we're typically on a four-year rotation. And again, it varies. Our south farm is typically 1 year of potatoes, a year of seed corn, and then a year of some type of either soybeans or snap beans, and then probably another year of seed corn and then back to potatoes. Up in central, up in the Central Sands area, our farm up there is more on a three-year rotation. We always look for 4 years, but that just kind of seems to be how it works out up there, where, you'll have a year of maybe silage after potatoes and then have a year of snap beans and then back to potatoes.
And Wisconsin grows a lot of different crops. What are some of the other crops grown in your region, even if they're not by you guys?
Yeah. At our south farm, it's definitely going to be seed corn, but up in the Central Sands, I mean, we're very well known for snap beans, snap peas. And I can't remember that statistic, but I think we're either number one or number two in snap peas, in the country. So a lot of vegetables up there, a lot of sweet corn, some carrots. So, the possibility is kind of endless up there.
I know you guys rank up there in cranberries too.
Yes, sir. We do.
I don't, yeah.
Yeah, that's it's not a rotation crop for potatoes, but there's a lot of cranberry bogs as you go north in the state.
We're going to take just a quick break here for a message from our sponsor. Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The team at 1-4 Group has a solution for you. Their biocontrol 1-4 site has proven time and again to be the best sustainable option for delivering high quality potatoes. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast. Switching gears just a little bit, what are some of the areas that you guys have been focused on maybe upgrading or improving some things in recent years, or have you implemented any new things that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to answer that just because there's so many things that we're trying to improve and get better at. One of the things in the more recent years is trying to, figure out which varieties are working good for us and which seed grower, that grows that variety is working good for us. We like to diversify and not just have one russet Norcota, for instance. We might have russet Norcota and then have two or three of the Norcota strains. So we found in the past it's always better if you diversify, but at the same time, we're trying to do a better job of identifying which ones perform better year after year. If variety A is, 20%, better at this particular aspect, if you're always going to get 20%, bigger over 10 ounce and have 5% less hollow heart in it, well, that's going to be one we need to look at getting more of the following year. So, we're always looking at, fertilizer trials. There's always, and I don't know what people call it, but some of the different names, snake oil or rueful dust or, I don't know what you call it, but everybody's always coming out with these new products. And I think there's merit in a lot of them, but at the same time, you've got to kind of proof them out. So,
Trial by error. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yep. And then we're also looking at, just equipment. There's so many new and advanced models of harvesters or windrowers or, collectors, dirt eliminators coming out that if we can increase production and just the speed that harvest moves, then, there's a lot of money to be saved there. So a lot of different facets we're looking at every year.
Well, I'm sure it's a constant challenge of doing more with less.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Larry Olson really praised your ability to make sound and effective technological application decisions. So what is your approach when you get to, you see something needs to be done and kind of what goes through your decision-making process of what to do about it?
You know, it's kind of hard to put on to put a flow to that, you know, if you will. You know, the first thing, you know, there's always two things you got to look at if you're going to come up with a new way of doing something. There's the actual, you know, solution to a problem, but then there's the part of trying to get buy-in from your team members that have to implement that solution or work with that solution. And I don't know if you've been around farmers a lot, but, you know, there's that, well, we're going to always do it this way because that's the way we've always done it. You know, there's a lot of that attitude in the farming community. So I like to, you know, use technology, just not to prove that a solution can work, but to try to put it in a way that I can prove to our team members to try to get buy-in that, you know, okay, if we can cut seed and, you know, and set up these pieces of equipment, we can be 20% faster. You know, it's a multi-stringed approach that I try to take whenever I try to put something on a spreadsheet or, you know, make some formula that figures out something. I try to do it in a way that I can take it and show it to somebody else.
Yeah, sense. I think every industry's got those. We've always done it this way. There's a large sect of that. I mean, it's just people are going to gravitate toward the tried and true ways, and they're always going to be skeptical of a different way to do things. So it sounds like you got a good philosophy on it's one thing to feel like you got the solution, but when you can get other people to buy into it, then that's when you can make waves. So,
exactly.
So going back to, say, coming out of college, you know, before you really made this your profession, and you look back at all the things you've learned and done, what advice might you have for young Bo?
You know, I'm a pretty introverted person, so I think the two things I would say to young Bo is, you know, speak your mind a little bit more often and don't be afraid to step on some more feet, you know, some more shoes. So that's the other thing. Sometimes I can be too nice, and you know, there's a time to be nice and there's a time to be forceful. And whenever I was younger, I should have been maybe a little bit more forceful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, we all got to learn that, don't we?
Yeah. So, yeah. True that.
What do you enjoy most about working at Olson Farms? You mentioned earlier that, you know, you guys got a great team there. So.
Yeah. I would have to say, you know, foremost, it's our team. We just got a lot of hard workers. And whenever you've got to be out there at 9 o'clock at night doing something, if you've got, you know, your teammates there working alongside with you, makes the day go by a little bit better. So, but the other things I like is, you know, Larry, our owner, he's just really flexible. As long as he gets the results that he needs, he's kind of flexible on how we get there. So I like that. I kind of thrive under that. Well, we know that we've, you know, we're at A and we need to get to B, you know, however it happens, just get us there. So having that freedom to think about things a little bit differently, I just really like that.
When you think about your career so far and you look at where agriculture and farming has come in a short amount of time, any thoughts on how things might change in the way we do things, say, in the next 5 to 10 years? Yeah. Are there any things that, you know, any tools or technology that's kind of on your radar? Like, boy, I'd really, really love if we had this.
Yeah. You know, I think there's definitely a lot of automation coming down the pipeline. You know, you've seen, you know, drones, for instance, have been pushed for the past, I don't know, 5, 6 years, but the actual, what you can do with the pictures that they take hasn't really been there. And so I'm expecting to see a lot of growth in that. I'm really excited about that. I think another area that I'm excited about, I don't know if you've heard of, it's called RNAi. You know, it's something that you know, you've been hearing some of the potato shows the past couple of years, but it's basically a compound that you could spray on an insect and it turns off certain receptors that make them resistant to a certain type of chemistry, for instance. And again, it's kind of new. You know, I don't understand exactly how it works, but I know it's something along those lines that, you know, if you know, we used a chemical 30 years ago and it worked for 5 years on, say, potato beetles, and then it stopped working because they got resistant. But it was such a good chemical because it wasn't a big polluter, and you could put it out at low rates, say. And again, this is, I'm talking something hypothetical, but, you know, say, you know, we've got that chemical out there, but, you know, the beetles we have are resistant to it. Well, you could go spray some type of an RNAi compound on the beetle, turns off that receptor. You can go spray that, whatever chemistry it is, and have an effective control of beetles. You know, I'm really excited with that. So, and again, I would challenge everybody to look that up. You know, just, you know, it's we're kind of on the front part of it, but I think there's going to be a lot more research, and hopefully some actual tools available in the next few years on that.
Yeah, I have heard some about that too. And I know there's research on that particular insect because it does develop resistance so quickly that, you know, they are identifying how it's pulling this thing off and how it's, its biology can like make adjustments. And So, yeah, they're really coming up with some exciting things on like how it's developing this resistance. And of course, that's the next step of, how do we shut those things off? You know,
yeah,
so
exactly.
I know that's a tedious insect for so many in the industry. So very exciting.
If there was just some way that you could spray something that has very little toxicity out there, it'd just be so much better across the board, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. So, and again, right back to that thing, doing more with less. So that's a common theme we're always hearing in ag these days. So it's the whole sustainability and you know, the more we can do that, I think the better we all are, just in terms of farming, but also in terms of public perception of farming.
Sure.
So when we ask about the varieties that you guys grow, do you have any favorites that you like to work with, or is there any new varieties that you've kind of excited about that you're experimenting with?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. You know, I tend to like any variety. You know, we've got some guys on our team that tend to prefer, you know, this one or that one, but to be honest, I like all of them, I guess, if that makes sense. I'm not a big fan of minis. You know, that's a big thing that's kind of taken the state of world by storm in the past 4 or 5 years, but for anybody that's had to actually take some out from the field and try to wash it at home, you know, that's not for me. So anything that's A size and that I can preferably bake, I'm a fan of.
Is that your favorite way to eat them, baked?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so.
You a butter and sour cream guy too?
Yes, sir. Yep. Okay. And I know, you know, that's definitely what makes a potato bad. It's not the potato itself, but it's just like they were meant to go together.
So. Oh, and you're in Wisconsin too, so of course, maybe cheese too?
Yes, sir. You better believe it.
Yeah, so, well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up, Bo. We covered a lot of different things that you're doing there, and I really appreciate all your insight and your time. Thank you for doing this, and we appreciate, you know, having you as a guest.
Thank you. It was good to be here, and I think you're doing a really good thing with this podcast.
Oh, thanks, Bo. I appreciate that. And you guys do great work at Awesome too, so keep up the good work. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com. We'll see you next time.